working. I've got to the holiday.
You know, I'm going to begin this, and I'm going to just expect that people will accumulate and come in. We did a session earlier today, this morning, in which people also kind of straggled in from the other site. Okay. Introduce myself. My name is Gil Ojeda, and we're doing this session in conjunction with the Health Equity Caucus, and I'm the director of CPAC, and I'm the program chair, and the CPAC is also kind of help support some of these speakers to come and visit today and present some of their ideas. The CPAC is a program of the University of California. We've been housed for the last 10 and a half, almost 11 years, in the Office of the President, UC Office of the President, and we just recently, as of June 1st, moved over to the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. And our function is kind of an unusual one. It's a public university, UC, providing its expertise in the healthcare access arena to state government, state decision makers in the executive branch and the legislative branch. And we don't know quite anything like it in the country, okay? And it's UC puts up the whole dime for the whole thing, this effort, and it has been doing so for the last 11 years. The intent is to work on issues related to access to care, related to the uninsured and the underinsured, and the related issues related to the healthcare delivery system. And back about in 2000, actually, we were approached about an idea to develop, help promote an initiative with the incoming Mexican government. Vicente Fox, back in 2000, got elected as the president, the first non-pre-president in, I don't know, 60 years. 70 years, okay, and it was supposed to be, it was a new time for Mexico, and in doing so, he said, one of the things he said in his campaign, one of the things he ran on was the idea is that migrants were the heroes of Mexico, and he said, not only has the U.S. treated them badly, but we have as well, we Mexico, okay, and so we're going to do something about that in the next administration. And so we became involved in an early dialogue in 2000. We talked very closely, and we had friends with the Ministry of Health and Julio Frank at the time, with the Foreign Affairs Ministry, a guy named Jorge Castañeda, with the Mexican White House, a guy named Juan Hernandez. Okay, and we began to fashion the idea of collaboration between the state of California, between specifically the University of California, and the Mexican government on a public health initiative. That initiative, originally named the California-Mexico Health Initiative, has since been named the Health Initiative in the Americas because we now include several Central American countries, something like 33 states across the nation, and so it's become a very active vehicle. Well, the idea of bi-national health insurance became an interest of ours. In the early years, in 2002, 2003, and in fact, one of the presenters was first started off as a graduate student, MPH graduate student, then a PhD student, and now he's on the faculty at UCLA, School of Public Health. So that's kind of how long these kinds of things take to germinate, if you will. And in those early days, we realized that the marketplace in Mexico was a very different animal, entity, if you will, than the marketplace here in the U.S. And so it was a collaboration between two very different systems, both on the public side as well as on the private side. And the conception was that we could help develop, if you will. We could engage with Mexican partners and U.S. partners and California partners to develop some new models for consideration to develop binational insurance. To serve migrants that are working in this country, as well as their families that stay in Mexico. So the projects and the presentations today are all around that particular theme, and our lead presenter is Dr. William Dow. He's a full professor at the School of Public Health, UC Berkeley. He's worked as on the I think as the Council of Economic Advisors for the Bush White House in its earlier period, I guess. And he looks too young to be a an economic advisor, but he is. He's a veteran guy, and we've come to really know him and like him and work very closely with him. And he leads an effort on the Berkeley campus around a biannual insurance work group that we as well as Health Initiative of the Americas has been working very closely with. So, Bill.
Thank you very much, Gil, for organizing this session. We have an intimate group, so hopefully we can have a little bit more of a conversation style than is usual. I am much newer to this topic than some of my colleagues on this panel. So Dr. Gonzalez-Bach and Dr. Warner have been at this and thinking about it much more deeply and much longer time than I have. But as Gil described the environment in Mexico in 2000 as sort of a new time for Mexico, we have the potential of having a new environment, new policy environment for health insurance policy in the United States. And I want to come at this question thinking ambitiously about what some of the possibilities are and not trying to be as constrained about what's politically possible in the current political environment, but think about what would be the potential options for binational health insurance moving forward. And I'm a health economist, so I come at this with a particular focus about thinking about the financing. And there's so many health insurance initiatives over the years that have really floundered on the shoals of financing problems. And that's what I want to try to push everybody to think even more deeply about than they have been. So I think most people in this room have an idea of what we're talking about, but just I'll give one definition of what binational health insurance is, although I think Dr. Warner's going to be talking about a slightly different incarnation of this he can tell you about. But we can think generally about binational insurance as being some insurance policy that provides some kind of benefits across two different countries, and in particular, what we'll be we're all talking today about U.S. and Mexico. Thinking about, I'll be talking most specifically about policies for individuals who are Mexican nationals in the United States. So why is this important? I don't have to preach to the choir here at APHA. We know that uninsurance leads to all sorts of bad outcomes, whether you're worried about the expenditures, potential health consequences. But more importantly, in this particular context, now, we don't know the exact numbers, but maybe there are less than 11 million Mexican-born individuals in the United States, and maybe 6 million of those are uninsured. And clearly, we need some kinds of new initiatives to think about how to deal with that uninsured population. So what I want to think about now are what are the particular benefits of binational health insurance as opposed to other types of health insurance reforms which cover individuals in the United States and they wouldn't have the label binational associated with them. Well, I want to think about this in two different domains. One is the benefits of binational service delivery and the other, the binational financing. Right, so the service delivery is what a lot of people think about when they talk about binational health insurance, the idea that individuals can access healthcare providers on both sides of the border. So as an individual living in the United States may be able to go over to across the border to Mexico and use providers there. So what are some of the benefits of that? Well, one of the most cited benefits of this is the potential for lowering costs, because healthcare providers are generally paid much less on the other side of the border. This is something that worries the AMA and that physician advocacy groups in the United States, but for advocates in the uninsured, it's a huge attraction. There are always issues around the quality of care. One of the sort of questions which hasn't really been addressed very well, there's been sort of hand-waving, you get a little bit of estimates from health insurance companies, but exactly how much could be saved by using by making cross-border care available to individuals? And this is something that I think will be very important for research agendas as we move forward, as we really try to struggle with the nitty-gritty of the financing, and we actually have to make all the numbers add up. So And people also cite potential benefits, health benefits, of binational service delivery in terms of more culturally competent care being available to individuals. In addition, if you have a binational health insurance product, there's the potential that you could have integration of care by the insurance company so that the care is coordinated across your different providers on the different sides of the border. I think many people would argue that this is extremely difficult to do and sort of unlikely to be realized, but it's one of the potential benefits out there moving forward to the future. And then thinking about labor market sort of efficiencies, as individuals who are moving across the border regularly because of employment issues, it's going to be much easier to allow them to do so, and they may be more willing to do so if they have access to health care through financial access through insurance. How important that is, we don't really have very good evidence, but there's not a whole lot of evidence that suggests that a large portion of the migrant population are making the migration decisions based on the availability of health insurance. So that may not be one of the major benefits. On the financing side, okay, we already talked about sort of the cost savings of people are using cheaper care on the other side of the border, but I think one of the real potentials here is for a binational health insurance policy to actually integrate some of the different sources of financing that are currently paying for this fragmented care system that uninsured individuals are getting who are using care on both sides of the border. If you can try to integrate this fragmented financing and direct it towards financing premiums for a binational health insurance product, then that could be a major, major benefit of the idea of promoting binational health insurance. There's also the idea of health financing equity. So if you have an insurance product, you can actually have a sort of negotiated set of contributions that are sort of more explicitly planned about sharing the financial burdens. Okay, so lots and lots of challenges that people have identified having to do with binational health insurance. Let me just name a few, starting with the financing. Okay, most individuals who we're talking about targeting with this insurance are actually lower income, and they're going to need premium subsidies if they're ever going to take up these products. Okay, not a trivial problem. In addition, as people move on to going from uninsured to having insurance, they typically use more health care. And that means we can't just redirect all the same dollars in the system and assume that it's going to pay for everything. We're actually going to have to generate extra dollars from outside the system today. Another major problem is the low demand for health insurance. I think this really speaks to the question of what are the populations that it's feasible to really think about having capturing some of these benefits of binational health insurance. We think that there's probably going to be low demand for health insurance in this population, just as we have low demand for health insurance in many other low-income populations in the United States. So people who have studied premium subsidies for low-income, sort of non-migrant populations, and you often need premium subsidies of upwards of 80% of the premium in order to entice people to actually move on to these plans. Okay, otherwise, many people aren't going to move on to them. That's aside from the problem that a lot of this population isn't used to the idea of going out and purchasing health insurance. It may be very difficult to understand the fine print, and for the undocumented population, it may be very threatening to be on some formal health insurance policy. Geography is also going to be a big problem. So one of the key benefits that we talked about in terms of binational health insurance is the ability to use care providers on both sides of the border. As you get farther from the border, that's going to be less and less attractive as a benefit of binational health insurance. And if you're insuring a whole population which is far from the border, then actuarially there's going to be very little benefit because most individuals are not going to actually use care across the border. So the potential for insuring a large number of people away from border areas may actually be not that great. In addition, while we worry about all sorts of adverse selection problems, all the usual adverse selection problems associated with these products. And one of the things that I think that we need more discussion about in this literature is what is the role of mandates. I'll come back to that in a minute. There are lots of regulatory barriers that people have talked about, the administrative barriers, again, to integrating care across both sides of the border. There are very few good models of successful integrated integration across different systems, even within a country, much less across systems that have language barriers. And then there, one could spend an entire session just talking about the political barriers, the resistance to financing care of immigrants or emigrants, and which leads to migrants sort of falling through cracks without some kind of systematic international agreement where parties have sort of come together to negotiate this. So one of the implications of this is that the potential for binational health insurance is going to vary across different groups. So there are a couple of groups where there are existing binational health insurance products that don't have a huge take-up, but where we see some take-up of this. One is among sort of non-poor documented immigrants living in border regions of California, where some of these products are being sold currently by private health insurance companies. So again, the particular benefits why we think we see this in the private market is partly because there's the ability to have some lower premiums because they're in the border area and people are actually taking advantage of border crossing, and because of some scale economies when you're in an environment with a large number of individuals to be targeted, to be recruited into these plans. The second population has actually greater coverage of binational products is circular migrants, those working with large employers. But groups that we're worried about are the low income, unless they have very high subsidies, the undocumented, so we sort of talked about that before, unless maybe there's an employer mandate which required the employers to actually either provide or somehow verify insurance for these individuals. And then, again, those individuals living far from the border. So some of the binational health insurance ideas that have been discussed might be to provide some kind of primary care in the United States, and then if individuals get seriously ill, they could return to Mexico, assuming that they had family and strong networks in Mexico that they could return to, that would make it attractive for them to want to get care in Mexico. But one of the problems with that is that under the Mexican healthcare system today, there are few pre-existing condition restrictions on individuals. So you can wait until they fall sick and then go back to Mexico and then they can get highly subsidized care. They don't have to be paying premiums for years and years and years. So we lose the potential for individuals to be contributing to the system while they're still healthy, which is what we want them to do in order to be risk sharing. So there are lots of building blocks for health insurance. One of the things that I'll sort of point out, which hasn't been discussed to my knowledge in this system, in this binational health insurance discussions, is that when individuals in this country get insured through their employers, in the current system, there's a tax subsidy which helps pay for some of that insurance. So if you pay payroll taxes, what you get paid by the firm is actually paid with pre-tax dollars. So the government is essentially subsidizing 15% of the premium. If your income is high enough that you're paying income taxes, then that subsidy could go up to 25%, 35%, even higher income individuals, over 50% of the premium can be subsidized through the insurance. So that means that there's a large value in thinking about these products in the employer system, in the system that we have today here in the United States. So let me just jump ahead to what I would like to see more discussion about. And one of the options here for thinking about moving forward with binational health insurance on a more aggressive scale is to attempt to capture the various subsidies which are being provided for uninsured migrant populations today in the healthcare system. So there are subsidies that are coming from the federal government through DSH payments for uncompensated care for hospitals, through FQHC subsidies for clinics. States are providing funds. Counties provide an awful lot of funds for uninsured populations. lot of individuals may actually be crossing the border now, at least in border areas, and using subsidized care from the Ministry of Health facilities in Mexico. Some of them may actually have access to health insurance on the Mexican side of the border today through some of their families or through prior employment relationships, etc. We also see that private pharmaceutical companies in this country are subsidizing drugs for uninsured low-income people. We want to be able to capture all of these subsidies. This is going to require, A, identifying how big those subsidies are for different groups, and B, some government entities being willing to actually put some ideas on the table and negotiate how much each one should be paying for this. So, for example, you might want an explicit arrangement where the U.S. government will subsidize premiums more the longer someone has been in this country. And the Mexican government maybe subsidized less those premiums, right? So you might think about some explicit plans like that. So I'm not going to go into all the details here of potential plans and ways to lower costs, but the other thing that I really want to mention here today is the potential role of mandates. And it's been discussed in various bills that have been introduced in the U.S. Congress, the idea of health insurance mandates for migrant populations associated with certain visa classes. And who knows what's going to happen as health reforms go forward. If you had a plan to actually redirect some of these subsidies so that you could provide adequate subsidies for low-income individuals, then there's the potential political traction around the idea of mandating that migrants actually have health insurance. Okay, that would reduce adverse selection problems tremendously. That's one of the big attractions to it. And it would actually be something that I think would raise the political attractiveness of any of these ideas from a number of different potential government partners that you want to try to get to the table for negotiating this. And I think that some of the libertarian groups would be less concerned about this than they are with the U.S. population because of the nature of the immigrant population. The second thing that's been talked about a great deal in U.S. healthcare reform is employer mandates. So employer mandates have the potential of sort of reducing costs, for example, by capturing that tax subsidy that I mentioned, lower administrative costs, et cetera, although there's sort of the risk of labor market distortion. So there's economists tend to be often raise more concerns about the employer mandates, but there's certainly a lot of political attraction to them right now. So if we're going to see financial health insurance really take off, then we're going to need to find a way of capturing all these subsidies, redirecting it, and somehow encouraging all these people who, because of lots of these demand issues that we just talked about, may not be going out and buying insurance themselves, to actually go out and do so. So let me stop there as I've sort of set the stage for some of the more specific plans that people are going to talk about. Thank you.
For our second presentation, we're going to head off in a different direction, okay? And it's a direction that is a distinctly different population, but there are linkages, and I think Dr. David Warner will talk about that. Dr. Warner is a professor at the school, the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. He's been very engaged on these insurance issues for underserved for a long time, I think more than sometimes he cares to remember. Okay, and Dr. Warner and I have known each other for about 30 years. Okay, and the issues related to Medicare are his particular focus in this presentation, where he will be talking about the issue, the possibility that retirees, that go to Mexico, both American citizens, naturalized citizens, Anglos as well as Mexican people of Mexican descent, go back, whether they can get their care covered by Medicare. David.
Thanks, Gil.
Yeah, no, I when Will was talking, I was thinking that when I first moved to Texas in 1975 and did a project on the health of Mexican Americans in South Texas.